Thank you, Winston. You added another very interesting dimension to this. I must say, I was not sure how this conversation would unfold, but it has certainly unfolded richly in terms of the dimensions. I'd like to just say at the outset that our purpose in organizing this session was really twofold. One, that really primarily because we are aiming towards the second section where we have a specific application, a specific issue to be addressed. But in our earlier discussions on this, we felt that it's important to approach this from a wider frame of reference. And in fact, with Winston's leadership, our goal was to launch a new project of the Academy on global rule of law, which the discussion paper in CADMUS was supposed to frame some of the issues for. And then within that context, to specifically look at the, and then with this as a broader frame, to look at the specific issue of abolition of nuclear weapons. And I think it will be clearer when we come to that why we felt it was important at least to draw the outlines of a wider framework beforehand. I realize that the topics that have been raised today are fruitful material for years of research, not for a brief discussion, but our purpose here is really to raise issues that would in fact define or help us elaborate a program of more systematic investigation in the future under the Academy. It was interesting as I listened to the several presentations today, it's evening, it's nighttime for me, I was reminded of what one of the founding fellows of the Academy and former president and a mentor to Winston, Harold Laswell, one of the cardinal principles of his work, he showed the relationship between social process, the power of political process, and the legal process. And as I listened to the presentations today, I saw very clearly that what we were really doing was looking at law within a wider political and social framework. And I think that's a very important perspective for us when we get into the issue of nuclear abolition. I very much enjoyed, Amir, your paper and your comments now. I thought this topic itself of the linkage between systems of governance and rule of law is a very rich issue worthy of much more serious or much more elaborate detailed investigation in future, and I hope we can create a particular platform in which to do that. It was interesting because you have raised the linkage between power and law from one point of view. Hawken has really raised it from another point of view. When he talked about the systems, the conditions that determine possibilities in society, and the systems, the social systems which define those possibilities. And of course, those systems are very largely based on existing power structures, not just the power of government, but very much the power of money. And you approached it from the point of view of corruption, which is very much about the power of money to influence political systems and therefore the way law is administered. Winston alluded to it in his very interesting list of problems, because many of these also come from the fact that power in the society, if it is not lodged illegitimately or through an authoritarian government, it is exercised through many other players who have their own self-interest and not universal principles of justice. at issue. This is going to be very relevant for our later discussion on nuclear weapons, because essentially we're dealing with a global legal system that is very much influenced by a global political system that certainly lacks important characteristics of what we would call representative government. So in trying to deal with the issue of the legality of nuclear weapons, we are also forced to go back, I believe, to look at the political system and the power system in which it's framed, and look at the principles that would challenge the validity of law based on the existing system. From the comments that we heard, and I'm just raising a few points and a few I hope that will stimulate further discussion. I'm not trying to come to conclusions. I think it's interesting to look at the evolution, the change in international law, to see how much it's a product of the post-war political structure embodied in the United Nations, and to see how much international law is changing over time, or the directions in which it needs to change in future. I think that Winston, in his paper on what we call the simulated judgment, makes a strong argument for pushing for the evolution of international law and not just basing ourselves on past precedent of law. Narrowly defined, law involves a legal process, and the power process sanctioned by the sanction of the lawmakers. Broadly defined, law involves a social process in response to aspirations and demands of society, a theme that we've been hearing from all of the speakers today. As Winston wrote in his paper, reflects a codification of public conscience. And so one of our questions will be with regard to nuclear weapons, what is the public conscience and how can it legitimately be codified in a manner that really reflects the conscience of humanity and the interests of humanity? I think another issue which comes up, Winston alluded to a number of crises, and his list of crises, which he quickly ran through, correspond very much with the experience that the Academy is having and in our work with the Club of Rome also. Wherever we look in the world today, the global crisis, not to be overly dramatic, but we have a financial crisis, an employment crisis, the crisis of nuclear proliferation we'll discuss, a resource crisis, climate threats to climate change, increasing social unrest and terrorism, and one of the common characteristics of all these crises is that they all reflect on and to some extent are the result of the inadequacy of our institutions of global governance. In fact, in a meeting which Ido and I just came from in Rotterdam with the Club of Rome, we came to the conclusion that it's really not possible to address any of these crises in isolation, because they all have common roots in the insufficiency of global governance. If that's the case, then when we talk about the development of international law or the exercise of international law to address one of these problems, we are indirectly talking about evolution of the system of global governance to enhance our capacity to address the others as well. I think I will just make one more comment before we open it up, and that is I hope that either in this session or in the one that follows, that we can address the issue of, which Winston alluded to in his opening remarks, the global sovereignty of humanity. This was actually based on a comment that Jonathan Granoff made about it 15 months ago at a conference we had in Delhi on abolition of nuclear weapons, where he was talking about the sovereignty of nation states, and nation states to some extent accept that there are inalienable rights of their citizens. But what we really lack today is a representation for the collective humanity. Our institutions really are much more effective in representing the interests of nation states than they are of reflecting the interests of humanity as a whole. And this is a theme that goes through Winston's paper. And I hope that both in our theoretical discussion and the practical discussion, that we can reflect on the evolution of the concept of sovereignty and the legitimacy, the legal legitimacy of recognizing that collective humanity has sovereign rights and therefore needs not only political institutions, but also a legal framework within which to express them. And that all will rely on the capacity of the human social system and the social process to activate the processes that lead to power processes and legal processes. And that's where Emile's comments and Winston's about the importance of global civil society becomes very important. So I've just tried to frame some of the issues that I heard today, and I think those that will tie in nicely to the next section.